This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Several elite college campuses, such as those of Columbia University, New York University, Harvard, and Yale, were closed on Monday following major protest actions in support of Palestinian rights and against Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. This comes days after more than 100 activists at an encampment were arrested at Columbia. Protesters have been vilified as anti-Semitic, even though they include sizable numbers of Jewish students. Many of those students joined in a Seder at the Columbia encampment to mark Passover on Monday. Similar encampments have cropped up at college campuses across the United States. Meanwhile, news emerged of the discovery of a mass grave containing more than 300 bodies in southern Gaza, lending even greater credibility to genocide accusations against Israel. The United Nations reported that victims were found stripped naked with their hands tied. My guest is Shauna L. Redmond, professor of English and Comparative Literature at the Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race at Columbia University. She's also author of Everything Man, The Form and Function of Paul Robeson, and winner of a 2021 American Book Award, and Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora. Welcome to the program, Shauna.
Thank you for having me.
So first, tell me what it's been like, what it is continuing to be like on the campus of Columbia University. We're seeing these incredible shots of students having set up tents. It's a little bit reminiscent of the Occupy Wall Street movement, where basically people are occupying a part of the campus. And I understand you've been there in person. What's it been like? Have faculty also been showing support?
Absolutely. There have been a strong contingent of faculty who have been working for months with students, working in solidarity, trying to strategize together, but certainly very much interested in ensuring that they have the kinds of protections that they need to take the leaps that they've been taking. Leaps meaning the kinds of strong shows of support and solidarity with Gazans in particular, but for all Palestinian life. So there have been dozens of faculty who have been working with the faculty and staff for Justice in Palestine organization, as well as now a rallying number of faculty through the American Association of University Professors and others unaffiliated with any organization who now, in response to the events of this last week and President Manoush Shafiq, have shown quite a bit of support for the students and the kinds of draconian policies that we're seeing enacted here on campus. So tensions are high. There is quite a lot of concern for the safety of our students, but also the safety of ourselves, one another, right? The incredible police presence on campus being first and foremost the reason for people's discomfort, if not terror, in this moment, and something that has to be addressed immediately.
Students are being suspended. They're losing their right to protest. I mean, the crackdown on it has been pretty severe. But you bring up a really important aspect of this, which is the president of Columbia University, Manoush Shafiq, who has basically faced the wrath of both Republicans as well as her own community and her own university's stakeholders, including students and faculty. Why has she managed to basically upset everyone?
Well, this is the position. She has tried to use her position to appease a very vocal minority of stakeholders within the university, primarily being the Board of Trustees and very influential and wealthy donors, while at the same time excising from governing and decision-making her faculty, her staff, and her students. And so it is not surprising that we have all risen up in response against her practices, in particular over the last week, but certainly over the last 6 months. Our president has not even documented or released a statement in support of ceasefire in Palestine, let alone come out in support of free political assembly, free thought, political thought. And these are two of the biggest elements circulating in this moment for me as we try to negotiate the situation here on campus, is that there have been incredible efforts to wage war on political thought and assembly on campus, which has become, in many respects, a rallying cry for this larger crew of faculty who have shown up, particularly in yesterday's demonstration, where hundreds of faculty stepped out in support of a complete removal of sanction against student organizations and a reversal of the suspensions and disciplinary actions on campus, as well as calling for a reinstatement, a recommitment to faculty governance on campus, which the president has subverted through discretionary moves of her own in quiet. She has changed policy. That led to an initial blow up on campus around the suspension of Jewish Voice for Peace and Students for Justice in Palestine. That happened last fall. But she also dismissed a statute in Columbia University policy, which comes from 1968, in which it is her responsibility, before calling New York police onto campus, to consult robustly with the executive committee of the University Senate. And she did not do that and called police in to sweep her students instead. And so these are the things that are causing incredible turmoil on campus, calls for votes of no confidence, calls for censure of her president, of her role as president, and has also put her in the hot seat with elected officials in the federal government. And so she is not pleasing anyone because she is doing very little right, if anything at all, in this moment. She is not serving her community here well. She is not serving the international community well. She is not showing the kinds of robust humanism and determination and conviction of principle that we demand that she demonstrate as leader of this university.
The area around the area of the encampment at Columbia University and other campuses as well are being labeled a liberated zone. What does that mean exactly?
I think for the students, it means a number of things. It means a free speech zone. It means a free thought zone. These two things that Shafiq and others have attempted to foreclose on campus, right? The kinds of surveillance that we're seeing of students and faculty, as we saw demonstrated in her testimony before Congress, right? The naming of names amongst my colleagues, her faculty, and raising disciplinary decisions in front of a public audience. Those are the kinds of surveillance tactics and techniques that we're seeing displayed on this campus. And so the liberated zone is meant to signal the fact that we refuse those kinds of surveillance techniques, that policing is not permitted in that space, that things are handled peaceably and communally. It's a beautiful, beautiful scene and is setting an incredible model for the university, the city, and the world in how to actually live through difference with one another, right? Because there are many different religious faiths represented in that space, different races and ethnicities, different gender presentations, nationalities, languages, cultures. And that space is working towards some kind of peaceable demonstration of solidarity around belief in the need for a liberated Palestine, as well as an end to hostilities and war making that we're seeing in this moment.
There's a history as well, right, around anti-war protests and the right to free speech going back to the 60s. And of course, Columbia University in particular was home to Edward Said, the father of academic thought around Palestine. And many students and faculty feel that history is being deeply betrayed, right?
Absolutely. It's an incredible betrayal of his memory, of the chair that is named in his honor, now held by the important historian Rashid Khalidi, of the protests of 1968. So this policy that Shafiq bypassed in order to call NYPD onto campus was a result of those massive protests in 1968 around Black liberation. And it was set in place as a means of ensuring everyone's protection, right? Everyone's protection. Policing is a deeply anti-Black, anti-Brown, anti-immigrant exercise of power. And she is endangering everyone's safety by calling the NYPD onto this campus. So part of this liberated zone is about an abolitionist aesthetic. We need to get policing off of campus. So she's betraying 68. She's betraying the memory of Saeed, who still shows up on campus through memory, through memorial, through programming. She is also betraying the memory of something more recent, 1985, where there were massive demonstrations on campus in response to apartheid in South Africa. All of these things have been firmly kicked to the sidelines of discourse on this campus as she's claiming to care about safety, which she has made a very exclusive category of existence. Only very few people on this campus feel safe, and I am not one of them.
Now, the Palestine exception to free speech, as it's been called, is something that is not new. It's been around for a long time. Groups like Students for Justice in Palestine have learned the hard way over the years that free speech is perfectly acceptable on college campuses, except if you talk about Palestine. And we're seeing that really being escalated in these past few weeks, and really since October of last year, it's been escalating. How do the authorities and the conservatives and the pro-Israel and the Zionist movement use the idea of free speech to subvert free speech? And, you know, it's becoming increasingly hard to label these protests anti-Semitic because Jewish students are so central to them, and yet they managed to do it.
Absolutely. Jewish students, Jewish faculty are super important to this movement here in bringing light again to the atrocities happening in Palestine. And I really want to insist upon that being our focus, right? That these are the kinds of conditions to which the students are responding and now facing incredible threat, and faculty increasingly as well. I have colleagues who are teaching rightly, necessarily, about settler colonialism in their classes and are being surveilled and informed upon by their students, by occasionally other colleagues and administrators as well. There was a rumor spreading amongst the faculty that anyone who was teaching about Palestine was supposed to check in with the chair or administrator of their unit. Those are the kinds of surveillance strategies that are happening in the classroom, even as we're also being faced with incredible police presence, operatives walking amongst us who are videotaping and taking pictures of students, such that many students now are covering their faces with keffiyehs and masks as a means of trying to subvert the surveillance apparatus. So the conditions of speech and thought on this campus have been deeply, deeply curtailed. And anti-Semitism has been used as a cudgel by which to make that possible. Because the anti-Semitism task force has famously refused to define anti-Semitism, any and everything now has the potential to be it and to be wielded against faculty, staff, and students as a means of disciplinary action and dismissal.
And the Jewish students have been speaking out. They've been holding, I mentioned the Seder for Passover. They've been supported by Jewish Voice for Peace. And of course, that's not to say that there might not necessarily be some statements that might be put out or some people who might say things that are deeply racist against Jewish people. But that has always generally been in the minority. And all it takes is one instance of someone saying the wrong thing to have an entire movement being discredited by the mainstream as utterly anti-Semitic, right? We're seeing that. And we've seen this sort of thing before.
Right. Well, this is part of the issue with the surveillance apparatus, is that any given statement might be misinterpreted or might be excerpted as a means of then making an argument for anti-Semitism on campus and thereby foreclosing everyone's free thought, free speech, free assembly. And these are the kinds of concerns that have now befallen many of my colleagues, again, some of whom were named on Wednesday as Shafiq testified before Congress. Deliberate misquoting, deliberate miscontextualization such that now many people are under quote unquote investigation for having supposedly said things that the record documents they never actually said. And so these are the kinds of fear-mongering tactics that have been developed in a space that is meant to develop the expanse of ideas, but also the opportunity to make a mistake. We are now in a situation as teachers where we and our students cannot engage in free exchange of thought, in experimentation, in curiosity, but also in the very human element of being wrong. Let's have a discussion about why that might not be true or why that is absolutely emphatically not true. And those kinds of opportunities that the classroom is uniquely meant to provide have been deeply curtailed at this institution, meaning that we as faculty cannot do our jobs properly and our students are receiving subpar education for it.
So the very same people who denounced cancel culture are engaging in it, an actual
Absolutely.
Cancel culture.
Absolutely. And this stands in very stark distinction to the kinds of language that is used against Black and brown people. Oh, you're being too sensitive. Get over it. Slavery was a long time ago. X, Y, and Z, right? We can name all of these different kind of rhetorical strategies that the left and some liberals have used to dismiss claims of racism, anti-Blackness, etc. But now we see them revived in a deep and meaningful way in this institution and becoming the through line to so much policy and action.
So what has happened now at Columbia University? What is the status currently? You and I are speaking on Tuesday. Is the encampment still up? Is there a plan to continue it? Do you see it moving, you know, to other campuses? I know it has already moved to campuses like New York University, even Harvard and Barnard College. Where is this movement going as far as you can tell?
It's a good question. I don't know that there's any clear sight line around where it will end. I think that at this stage, Columbia, the encampment here is still up, but so too are the NYPD buses lined up on the perimeter of campus and oftentimes idling, causing us to wonder, are they ready to sweep the encampment again and take our students away, take our colleagues away? I think that threat of sweep, that threat of arrest is meant to deter the students, obviously, from partaking and participating in these events, and we don't see that slowing down here at Columbia. I think it's shaping up differently at other places. The arrest of our colleagues and the faculty at NYU last night is horrendous and terrifying for the simple fact of it being a further escalation of policing, but also for the fact that these administrators are feeling, it seems to me, somewhat emboldened in their efforts to actually curtail those kinds of moments of free assembly and political demonstration. We see recent uprisings or the beginnings of encampments and response at Cal State campuses. And so I want to be clear that this is not just about elite universities, although that may be much of the center of the conversation right now. This is happening all over the country. And it is so important to recognize that these fires popping up everywhere, metaphorically speaking, metaphorical fires, because literal fires will actually set off even a bigger firestorm for these campuses. But all of these energetic, deeply determined groups who are doing the work to continually draw attention to the genocide in Palestine are incredibly necessary for our capacity as thinkers, as activists off campus to actually make the kinds of arguments and demand the kinds of changes that we need to see both institutionally, but also locally and internationally.
Meanwhile, the genocide in Gaza continues. And I mentioned the discovery, the horrific discovery of the mass graves near Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza. 300 and counting people's bodies, including those of medics still wearing their scrubs, or some with their clothes stripped off. This is the horror that is being eclipsed by this battle over free speech, right? Because what the students and the faculty at Columbia and other places want is for the U.S. to divest from Israel, to stop fueling a genocide. Evidence of that genocide abounds, but is not making the news as much as claims of students being anti-Semitic.
Absolutely. And this is part of what we're trying to draw attention to as well. Get outside of the media spin machine such that we can actually focus on what's at stake here. What's at stake here are the thousands and thousands of people who are missing and gone for this onslaught on Gaza. And we actually have to keep attention there. So that is what the students are here doing. That is what the committed faculty here are doing. But the media is really trying to zero in on these individual incidents of anti-Semitism, which is not to dismiss them, but is also to critique as well the hysteria that has been generated around them that is keeping us from talking about different kinds of violence, and violence that is increasingly leading us into global war. So I want to insist upon that. The students have insisted upon it, and we want to refuse as much as possible the kind of navel gazing of the elite and the powerful who are trying to distill this conflict into a battle of ethnic antagonisms. That is not the case. That is absolutely not the case.
I want to thank you so much, Professor Redmond, for joining us today. Really appreciate your insight.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Shauna L. Redmond, a professor of English and Comparative Literature at the Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race at Columbia University. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.